WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and WNST.net. We're doing Baltimore Positive. We're at Roost Chris, Pier 5. Come back downtown. See the Ravens play. President Dick Cass joining us, our guest, the third part of our podcast, along with Don Mullen. Don, why don't you go nuts here, because this is the part where he asks you if you were a tree, what kind of tree would you be?
The lightning round, exactly. Well, let's start with, there are some issues out there floating around regarding the NFL. Maybe we touch on a bunch of them. Start with, first of all, the contract. Contract coming up with the players,
the collective bargaining agreement expires after the 2020 season.
And when I read, it looks like the tone is different than the last time, it seems to be. It appears to be people are closer to being on the same page and want to make something happen. Is that accurate?
I'm not supposed to talk about it because the commissioner would fine me if I said anything relating to the substance of it. But I think as many owners have said, and I'm not in the talks, but we get reports, and I think that the attitude of both sides, the mood of both sides is positive. So there's some optimism that something will get done. And we have a long time to get it done. I think people are cautiously optimistic that something will get done before the end of the 2020 season.
Dick, I've written nothing about the preseason. I've complained about it like everyone else. I've three times I've written to start to write, and I can't spit it out, but you got to do something about it. I mean, something has to move.
That's being discussed in the CBA talk. There's talk about the preseason and the CBA. We'll see what comes out of it, which could, it could affect the preseason for next year. We'll see.
What do you have to say about 18 games? Do you have any comment on that?
My own personal feeling, I would worry about it a little bit. I think it could work. You'd have to have an extra bye week, so players would have two byes. You'd cut down on the preseason. But I would, I think it's, they're discussing it. Let's see what comes out of the negotiations. The funny thing, 16 games seems to work very well. 17 games could work. 18 games could work. But, it's really, in a sense, it's
17 games, really?
You could do 17. You could.
What's the math on that?
Well, you could either have a neutral site game or every other year you'd have an extra home game.
Okay.
You could do that.
My concern, Dick, with things like 18, 17, you pick it, connects to another issue, and certainly in the news right now with Andrew Luck, and that is the whole safety of the players issue and the injury. We talked about the excitement that everybody's feeling right now about the Ravens. I know people say don't overblow it, but we're one vicious hit Lamar from having our season look very, very differently. And with 18 games, it seems to me part of the discussion has to be whether there's an increase in injuries.
Yeah. No, I think that is the real reason why, if it doesn't happen, both sides will decide it doesn't make sense for health and safety reasons. I mean, that's a critically important issue. I'm okay with 16 games, but if they go to 17 or 18, we'll deal with it.
So let me play the bad guy on the preseason, because I do want to get you out on this, because I think it's important, and I think it's something we've talked about here. The coaches clearly prefer these practices. I think the fans prefer the practices, for fans that have been out and have seen this. I was at the purple-white game, which I think is a wonderful thing. I saw you three or four times that night accidentally, and fireworks and all that. Yeah. That fans like these practices where they go and there's 300 plays, and there's a little, they're throwing the ball around, and there's music, and it's... Yeah. That is better than anything I've seen the last 20 years in the upper deck for tickets I've purchased.
Well, the practice against another team is good. I mean, those are really, a lot of work gets done. They're controlled, so they never go live. Like, I think against the Philadelphia, when we practiced against Jacksonville here in Baltimore, we practiced for 2 days. We only had four live plays during those two practices. Live meaning there was actually tackling. So we had two. We got the ball on offense two times on the goal line. They got the ball two times on offense on the goal line. And that was it. So it's not. You're not really tackling. You don't tackle in most.
So you think you need preseason games?
No, I think you need. I think to me, you. I think at least two would be good. To see some live hit. In part, to test out your rookies and your young people who are trying to make the team, it's sometimes hard to judge them on practice alone. How do they hit? How do they tackle? How do they react in a game situation? It's close in practice, but it's not the same. And so I think you need a couple of games to sort of give people a chance to make the team, I think.
But you would agree that this is something you're going to take in and other team presidents and owners are going to take in and say, preseason, we for years it was, if they're buying it, people are coming. I think at some point it's not good for your brand. It's not a good look.
I don't disagree with that. I wish we would reduce the number of preseason games. And something will emerge from the CBA negotiations, I'm sure.
But that's where
one
it
way
there. Happens,
that's
right?
where that's where it's going to happen.
Sure.
Yeah.
See, I would go. I would say, and it's a revenue issue, and I know it costs to open up the doors, but thinking of Baltimore Positive again, and it could be a ticketed event, but I'm thinking if it was drastically reduced or even free, you know, you said, look, we're going to eat this one. We're going to preseason games. We're not going to
could
charge
people. Could you get 16,000 people there for free? Do you really believe you could get that many people down there if you just
I don't know.
I don't think so.
Because you want the problem with that with free tickets, when you give out free tickets, two-thirds of the people will show and a third will just, because it's free, they say, oh, I'm not going to do it.
That's fair enough.
So you'd have to give out more than 70,000 right. to get 70,000.
Which potentially could be an issue.
It's just an issue. But it's not the money. I mean, look, if we added an extra playoff game, we would more than make up for losing two preseason games probably. I think.
Well, they're not revenue generators above and beyond the ticket you sell because people don't come, right?
I mean, yeah, they're not really. And we have reduced the preseason. You don't, as a season ticket holder, you don't see it because your season ticket package is one price. But if you actually looked at the face value of the tickets, so when we sell those tickets, they're being sold at half price.
Okay.
So
I don't know that I knew that.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, no, that's right. How we do it. So if every season ticket has got a price on it, and the price is different for different games this year.
Variable pricing. It all started with the Cubs when I tried to buy that ticket out in the bleachers, and they're like, that's the expensive seat. I'm like,
so if you buy, you know, if you buy preseason, it's basically half price of the average regular season ticket price. And then even on the regular season ticket prices, there are different prices for the Patriots game than there is for
the Bengals.
The Bengals or the Jets. You know, so it's different prices. The two, you know, you got games like that are high demand games like the Steelers and the Patriots are higher prices than. But for season ticket holder, it doesn't matter. It's one price.
Sure,
Dick. What's your sense? And again, the president whose name we won't say in front of Nestor, but I go back to the whole Kaepernick issue. Nestor talks about being there in London that day. You and I have talked about it. Voluminous articles written
sure.
about that. We had a president who decided to make the NFL a political issue and almost have folks choose sides, whether I am for the NFL or against the NFL, based on whether I'm in a red state or a blue state.
Yeah.
Talk to us and our listeners a little bit about how that has evolved, where the league has gone with that, and how you see that playing out.
You know, at the time, we did not have a league rule, any rule that said the players couldn't kneel, and we still don't. The rules have not changed. We still don't have any rule. What we've done at the Ravens is after London, we met with the players, with our veteran council. John and Ozzie and I met with them, and we talked about the issues, and we said to them, I said to them, let's help you create a different type of platform. And that's what we've tried to do ever since. So in 17, we began players saying, would go onto our website and do a short talk about what they cared about. And we would post them online. And those were, you know, we had about eight or nine players who did that. We also decided that we wanted to get the players involved in picking which organizations we, the Ravens, were going to support. And we wanted to get an organization that the players really could get behind. And so we interviewed a couple of organizations, and we presented several to a group of players. And we decided to give, to make a grant to an organization called Up to Us, which is an organization that's been in other cities, had not been in Baltimore. And they recruit coaches from neighborhoods to then coach teams that are comprised of students who are of middle age, you know, go to middle schools. They could be a school team. They could be a Boys and Girls Club team. They could be a soccer team, a lacrosse team. And so we announced that at a Boys and Girls Club later in the 17 season. We made a commitment of we made a 5-year commitment of $300,000 a year for 5 years to bring them to Baltimore. And they've set up an office, they've hired people, and they're recruiting coaches.
That's so terrific.
And the players really appreciated that because they helped select, they interviewed with us the organizations. And then last year what we did is we've introduced a group of our players who are interested. Not all of our players are interested, but we've met with Congressman Cummings to talk about Baltimore. We met with Senator Cardin to talk about criminal justice reform in Congress. And out of that, our discussion with Senator Cardin, which was last year, we sent a letter to Senator Mitch McConnell urging him to let a vote be taken on the First Step Act, which was a criminal justice reform act that had large bipartisan support, including from the president. And he was blocking it for some reason. So we sent a letter. It was public. I mean, I signed the letter, and we had, I think, 12 players sign the letter, and a couple of other front office people signed it. Then we also started a social justice fund last year where we encouraged our players to give money, and for every dollar they gave, we would put in two. And then we created a fund of $500,000, and then we selected, with their assistance, we selected which organizations would receive it. And a number of our players had read in the Baltimore Sun about schools not having heating or cooling, Baltimore City Public Schools.
And Aaron Maben was out in front of that, an NFL player.
And we picked a school, and we picked a school in Baltimore City whose name now escapes me. It's an elementary school. Mm-hmm. But we provided, of that $500,000, we used roughly $200,000 to get heating provided for that school. And that was installed by last December. And the players were, you know, very proud of that, and because we had provided money, but they had provided a lot of money as well. And then we supported an organization called the Job Opportunity Task Force. That was an organization our players also liked. They have a program to train people coming out of jail or people who don't have a job to learn a construction trade. And Whiting Turner is very active in that, and we provided them about $100,000 to that organization to help fund that program and to keep it going. And then there's a bunch of other organizations we gave to, so we handed out the 500. And we had we've done some other things that we're not talking about yet, but we will, and we will have another social justice fund this year. And
so these are substantive, Dick.
We responded.
We do this every week
We responded.
This is Baltimore Pop.
Right.
Yeah. This is what it's about.
Right.
We try to respond to that whole situation by really providing our players a platform that would enable them to get involved in the community in a positive way, with the hope, obviously, that they would not kneel at a game. Because we didn't want them to kneel, but we weren't going to order them not to kneel. And when they knelt, Steve said publicly he supported them because of what the president had said.
Well, see, Nestor and I talk online, offline about this.
But by the way, I want to mention, because I'm still getting letters about this from some fans who say, you guys have to stop protesting. I have to remind our fans, and I got a letter just the other day about it. I have to remind our fans, our players have knelt once, have protested once during the national anthem in September 2017. They have not done it again.
Yeah, no, facts don't matter in this universe, and that's...
matter, actually. In the long run, they matter.
They matter, but I'm saying...
They don't matter.
Right, I was being facetious in saying facts don't matter. It's frustrating. My concern is, because I think, you and I have discussed this, when the president chose to make this a political issue, it was truly a non-issue. In the NFL.
It was.
It was one or two players.
Let me give you the numbers.
And no one was noticing
The week before, the president gave that speech Friday night in Alabama. The Friday night, we were already in London for the game. And he gave that speech calling, you know, referring to our players with a bad name. The week before that game, I think there had been six players in the NFL who had knelt.
And how many players in the NFL?
On a game day, you know, you take the number, you could do the math better than I can, but it's roughly, say,
53 times 32.
Right, exactly. There we go.
You know, it's a lot. It's 1,500. And so...
six players knelt down.
Yeah. So, and the whole league. Yeah.
So you would have had, by when I say facts don't matter, by Monday morning...
That day, on Sunday, we had roughly... I think 1,100 players protested in one form or another.
Yeah. So this was an issue created by the president. And I think my concern, I'm assuming you guys are thinking about it, trying to think how to respond, that as this campaign moves forward and it becomes more emotional, the president's instinct will be to try to do this again to get his base to hate the NFL. How do you prepare for that?
Well, you can't really prepare except do what we do, which is engaging with our players and talking to our veteran players who are interested in Baltimore, and many of whom are, and tell them this is what we can do together, and this is a better use of our time, and probably better for you as well. But that's they have to make that decision, and we're not going to order them not to kneel. We can't.
Well, the ripple effect of all of it, I mean, what it did to my business, what it did to your business, what it did to the city, what it's done to friends and family and tailgates and all of that, I'm not real happy that the league has blackballed Colin Kaepernick either.
They didn't really blackball him, but no team has signed him. A blackball suggests there's an agreement. I mean, there's no.
Is it safe to say
that's not true?
And I respect that. Is it safe to say though that in some form, here's the discussion that took place in league offices across the nation? Is the constant media scrutiny and potential disruption to team chemistry worth what Colin would bring to our team? Is that fair?
I don't know really what other teams discuss. We were public and we said we considered him, and we decided not to go that way.
And you didn't fake consider him. Other people have
John did a lot of homework.
The Pink Sox did not go over well. I mean, there's no doubt about that.
They did not. But we seriously considered him and decided in the end not to do it. Because Ozzie had just signed RG3 before we had really even considered it. And he thought that was a better way to go.
And
for
if
us.
My recollection is, Dick, too, Nestor, you probably remember this, is that while some teams were kicking the tires for real, then all of a sudden out of the blue, his girlfriend came out with some crazy tweet.
It was nuts.
And just put it all back on the front page.
He was his own worst enemy. I fully see that, but I don't think it's a good look.
No, I wish you were on a team. It'd be a lot easier for the NFL if he were on a team playing for somebody, for sure.
All right.
Let's talk something positive. Let's go back.
What kind of tree would you be if you were a tree?
Let's talk about you started with this season. Let's end with this season.
Sure.
Yes.
I said to Nestor the other day, it must feel, and it can all change. We know that, and we get excited. But to be Eric DaCosta must feel pretty good right now. Because I said to Nestor, when I look down and I look at the potential of this draft class, this looks to me to be a draft class that might stack up against any Raven draft class in its history.
If you look at this draft class plus last year, I mean, if you think about last year, in the first four picks, we got a starting quarterback, a starting right tackle, and two starting tight ends.
Yeah.
And those are the four guys we got last year, plus some other people. And this year, it looks very good. You know, Marquise is looking really good now that he's back and healthy, and Miles Boykin is certainly looking good. Jalen Ferguson had a step back because of a little minor thing, but he'll be back on the practice field.
And then the real
surprise
that everybody's in love with, Justice Hill.
Everybody has
Justice Hill gaining 2,500 yards. Preseason enthusiasm.
Yeah, it's the way it is.
Don't know.
I do like Justice Hill.
Well, Justice Hill, it's funny. You know, he was the fastest running back in the draft. And I think he also had the longest broad jump and the highest vertical jump. So that shows he's fast and explosive. And that it seems that when you look at him on the field, he looks fast and explosive.
Yeah. Well, I know you all are excited. I said one day when I was out visiting with you guys, I've said it to Nestor, you all took not making the playoffs personally. Everybody that I know that works in Owings Mills was just, we're better than
this.
You came so close, you had it taken away from you two years in a row, right?
I mean, I've gone back, and it's funny, I've watched the Cleveland game, the last game of the season. I've watched the television tape of that a number of times now. And to watch John on the sideline as they get the ball, driving, and I could just, and he, at one point he sort of goes over, puts his head down, his hands down, he's praying. He's probably almost throwing up. Because all he can say, here we go. We were all on the sideline. I was down on the sideline at that point. We were all thinking, here we go again. Everyone in the stadium was thinking that.
Dick, I had my son sitting next to me, my son-in-law. I think
I never
my
think here we go again. I don't think like that. Right. That's why I do call him a positive. I never think here we go again.
I literally, I didn't know about John's head being down. But
Only for a second.
He's better than me because my son will kid. My head was literally down, and I was saying, because I like all of you out there. I think you work hard, and I'm thinking, and I'm saying to him, I'm mumbling, this organization doesn't deserve this. They don't deserve this again.
This is what he does in his seats.
I'll tell you something, though.
I take it seriously.
When we lost, and John probably would have said the same thing this year if the Cleveland game had not ended the way it had ended. After the Cincinnati game in 17, what a heartbreaker of a loss.
Oh, that was
fourth and 12, whatever it was, and they score and the game's over. We go in the locker room, dead silence, and John has to speak to the team. Then he has to collect himself right after that and speak to the media. And his first words to the team, hey, that's football. That's football.
I wish he would have called my 10-year-old grandson at the time who wasn't buying that's football.
John talked about that at the Fellowship of Christian Athletes. He talked about that really stung him.
It was so painful.
The Cincinnati loss was so stinging it changed demeanor a little.
Do you remember his
painful.
Line? Remember his line, Nestor? The days are long, but the journey is short. Yeah. I wrote it down that night. He said, "Oh, I kept thinking
that was a days really are long, inning. We've had a lot of painful losses." But that one was really, really a painful loss. We were so close. It would have validated everything we had been doing just to get to the playoffs.
I was pretty confident because of 17. The one thing in that last minute I was pretty confident of, we weren't going to be sitting back playing.
No. Wink was going to go down swinging. If we go down, he's going to go down swinging. That's the way he runs, and I think we all appreciate that.
Oh my goodness! Well, I hope you'll come back.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. It's been
great.
Fun.
We love the Ravens, as Nestor said. Key part of Baltimore Positive. Key part of this city, Nestor. I want to say, in my years in county government and as county executive, there was never one time where I called Dick or the Ravens and asked them to step in and help us that they didn't immediately say, what do you need? We'll do it. This is a class organization. Dick's part of that. We hang around with smart people.
I like Dick, too. Dick Cass, Ravens president
Dick.
Here.
Thank you, guys.
Don Moeller. We're not going to drink all this wine that is here, but we are Roots Chris Beer 5. We got incredible stuff coming up. Ron Shapiro's joining us. Who else we have?
Reverend Al Hathaway. Congressman John Sarbanes.
Sarah Heminger.
Ben Jealous. Sarah Heminger from Thread. You name it.
I know we're leaving somebody out.
Oh, she's amazing.
Everybody says that about her.
that's going to be our opening line.
Sarah Heminger's amazing.
Tell us a Sarah Heminger story.
Very quick story. We had Brandon Etheridge of the Ravens, our general counsel, got to know Sarah, and Sarah's been out to see me, and we've talked about what can we do together. And she said, well, you guys are kind of cool, and we're not that cool. So could we have watch parties, have a game where we have a watch party? So she organized, and they're such an incredible organization.
Unbelievable.
So there were for the Kansas City game last year, we hosted a watch party at our facility. There was another one at Johns Hopkins. There's another one both down the undergraduate campus and at the medical school. And places all over the city hosted watch parties of companies that normally wouldn't have done that. I think T. Rowe Price had one.
Maybe
Lake Mason had one. And that's the kind of thing they do. They can get all these people together, and we're going to try to do it again this year.
Well, people Nestor laughed because I don't think it's an exaggeration. Maybe one or two guests hasn't
every
mentioned
single
her,
guest.
But almost every guest has said, hey, by the way, you all need to talk to Sarah Heminger.
What's crazy is we've had, you know, Dutch and Barbara and Chris, all these superstars on, but all the
Freeman.
Superstars talk about Sarah Heminger.
Right. Every single one says, Matt Gallagher says he's got her winning some big award. Remember, she's going to win some.
She probably win a MacArthur Fellowship.
Award. So we can't wait to have her. Again, Dick Cass, Baltimore Ravens.
Thank you for having me.
We are Baltimore Positive, WNST.net, AM 1570, WNST Towson, Baltimore. Signing off from Roost Chris at WNST.